Hi, this is Bill Radke, and you're listening to Weekend America's MP3 podcast, and there's nothing wrong with that. But did you know there's a way to hear all of Weekend America, plus see pictures, videos, skip forward and backward through stories with better sound quality? It's the Weekend America Enhanced Podcast. And to subscribe, search for Weekend America in iTunes or go to our website and click on Enhanced Podcast.
Coming up on Weekend America.
When I ask what students are doing this spring break, this probably doesn't come to mind.
When we got here, there was no flooring in three of the rooms. We finished two and a half of the rooms, and we also painted all of the walls.
Changing the world while on spring break. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. Ice fishing requires skill, endurance, and one more thing.
A lot of times you come up and it's so fast that you're just flipping them into the bucket, throwing the line back in.
The quick reflexes of ice fishermen. And is it already the 10th anniversary of the MP3 player?
I see this guy pick up a little black box that's attached to his computer, disconnect it, plug in headphones, walk away, and blow my mind.
Is this the last music player we'll ever need? We'll let you know after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, welcome to The Weekend. I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul.
And I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles. On this weekend before St. Patrick's Day, we'll be taking you this hour to a Danny Boy marathon. Some people say a little of this dirge goes a long way, but those pipes are so gorgeous that when they're calling, sometimes you got to answer. What are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, I plan on going to an art opening.
This weekend, I'm heading to California for spring break.
Going to a St. Patrick's Day party.
Taking my children roller skating and cleaning my house.
We've driven from Vancouver to Chicago. We're on our way back up to Toronto area.
Oh, I'm working for part of the weekend. Then I'm going to go enjoy a couple of underground hip-hop shows at the Star Lounge.
I'm just finishing midterm, so this weekend I'm going to relax, drink a beer, have a po' boy. Have fun.
Oh, man, now I have to go find a Creole restaurant in St. Paul.
That is your task. Voices come from New Orleans this week, also Cincinnati and Chicago.
Well, this weekend, students nationwide are spending their spring breaks in exotic places like Cancun, Montego Bay, and Louisiana, where students are enjoying alternative spring breaks. That's where they do volunteer service over their break. According to studies, as youth volunteerism has increased, so has their interest in public policy and the political process. Youth voting has increased steadily over the past 7 years. Janelle Knight is a senior at American University, and she's spending her spring break volunteering in Louisiana. This week, she's helped rebuild a house damaged by Hurricane Katrina. All week long, she and fellow students have been hammering, painting, and putting down floors. Janelle, welcome to Weekend America.
Thank you.
So describe for me, where are you now?
I'm in a house in St. Bernard's Parish, which is right outside of New Orleans. And we've been doing repairs to the house. So we've been placing down floors, we've been painting walls, and just making the house look like a house.
Have you met the owner of the house?
Yes, we met the owner yesterday, and she just sat us down, and she just told us her whole story, and she gave us all hugs. It was just an amazing experience.
What was it like listening to her tell her story?
It was very emotional. She told us that one of her brother was a heroin addict before the storm, and when the storm hit, he's just not doing any drugs anymore. And she said, you know, I lost so many material values, but I got my brother back. And that was just phenomenal that she went through all of this, lost everything, and is able to still see the positive sides of things. And a lot of people that we've been seeing are the same way. And it's just, it just makes you so grateful for your life and life itself.
This isn't your first spring break doing volunteer work. You've done it before. You did it in Biloxi last year?
Yes, I did.
How was Biloxi different than you imagined it would be?
Well, I had never been to the South before. When I saw the destruction, I knew it was going to be bad, but I didn't know it was going to be that bad. And just to hear a lot of the residents are senior citizens, and just to know that a lot of them didn't even know what FEMA was. And this is more than a year later. It just made me really upset.
Is that part of the reason why you've made it a point to volunteer over your spring break?
Why I came down here was because I saw and I heard people saying that nobody cares about them, that their country didn't care. And I cared. And I knew that I'm a college student. I don't have much money, but what I can do is I can volunteer my time and I can volunteer my energy to actually help and rebuild.
Has your volunteer activity impacted at all your political awareness?
Yes. Before we actually arrived in New Orleans, we had been having meetings for 8 weeks, and we focused on government and the government's role in the recovery process. And this actually helped me understand. It was more not placing blame on people. We actually had a chance to meet with a FEMA representative in New Orleans, and that, like, it definitely has opened my eyes to seeing the whole story of things and really digging into things. And it does make you want to become more politically involved to make sure that issue is changed.
Do you feel sort of like an anomaly amongst your peer group?
No, it's actually a very popular trend that's happening. For our trip, we actually had an application process and we had to turn away people. It was too popular of a trip, and we didn't have enough room in vans to actually do it. So I know it's a popular trend and it's something that people want to do.
You said you felt joy at being able to be there and make a difference, and you've returned to the Gulf Coast area. You've returned to New Orleans this summer. Do you still have joy? Do you feel like you made a difference?
Yes. In fact, I think all the volunteers have made a difference. You can, and it's a change that you can actually see. And now that I have returned, I've seen so much improvement. And it proves that, you know, if you want to make a change and you just come down here and you want to volunteer and help build a house, no experience needed, you can make a difference. And it's, you can literally see it. And it makes me happy to know that I was part of the process and that other college students and young people are doing that as well.
Well, Janelle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
You're listening to Weekend America. You know, we're hearing a lot these days about economic statistics on employment and inflation, gross domestic product. Well, North Dakota's Democratic Senator Byron Dorgan held a hearing this week about whether these stats do much to capture our national sense of well-being and whether the government should track non-economic indicators of happiness. For a reaction, we turn to Darren McMahon, author of the book Happiness, A History. Darren, welcome to Weekend America.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, if the government measured happiness, what would we be measuring?
Well, you tell me. You know, it's important to realize that we don't actually have precise numerical qualifications of how happy somebody is on a scale. It's just people's own subjective evaluations of how happy they are in comparison to others.
So what effect do you think, if any, it has that the government tracks, for example, GDP, but not happiness in any measurable way?
Well, look, we there are all kinds of indices out there, and you know, the United Nations has a development index, and we keep statistics on many, many things. And I suppose in theory that I'm not opposed to government trying to measure happiness. I just don't think that this is ever going to be an effective means upon which to base public policy. Mm-hmm. And nor do I think the government should be in the business of trying to affect policy with the end of happiness. I mean, I don't want to suggest for a second that the kind of conversations that are going on in this country and up on Capitol Hill have any relationship to this, but let's look down the road. Remember the great nightmare of Aldous Huxley was Brave New World. The Brave New World was one in which everyone was happy, and the government had figured out how to make people happy and affected that. That is a dystopian picture, and so that's something that's always in the back of my mind when people talk about carrying out happiness for others. In the 19th century, the best example of this, of course, is Marxism. Marxism was a science of happiness. Marx believed that he was bringing about real happiness, is a phrase he uses. Stalin described himself as the constructor of happiness. Now, that sounds awful to us and you know, perverse, as of course it was. But I think it does highlight the way in which happiness can be used for ends that are not happy.
Well, Darren, let's say you're a U.S. congressman and you're proposing to pass a happiness stimulus package. And I know you're privately skeptical, Darren, but this is a purely political ploy on your part. You're just shamelessly pandering for votes. What's in that stimulus package?
Okay, well, I'll give you the response that might come out of the South. We know very well from the research on happiness that religious affiliation correlates well with positive subjective well-being or happiness. As to what actually about religion that causes, you know, higher happiness, that's unclear. And should I, as a, you know, pandering Southern congressman, say, let's get more religion in public life? I think a lot of people would be slightly resistant to that. And yet that seems to me to point out one of the slight dangers of having government too involved in promoting happiness.
How has studying this subject so much, Darren, changed your personal approach to happiness?
I came to a realization in the process that it turns out many people who've studied happiness have come to as well, and that is that if you think about too much about it and if you focus too much on it, it eludes your grasp. Go on a walk by the beach. Don't pursue happiness. Do it because you like the beach and you want to be with your family or what it is that you do, and then hopefully happiness will come to you rather than you trying always to grab it and having it squirm out of your hands in the process.
I understand you have a young child. Which I do as well. How much happiness do you derive from being a parent?
The data seems to suggest that being a parent, in fact, makes you unhappy. And that if you track people's happiness, it goes down in the period they have kids, and when the kids leave the house, that it goes back up. I think this is a wonderful illustration of the limitations of happiness as an index. I mean, look, there are all kinds of ways to organize your life. Again, you can organize it in terms of the pursuit of virtue or meaning or a religious goal or the pursuit of justice and so on and so forth. If you take that to the extreme, we shouldn't have children because it doesn't maximize our happiness. Well, that's absurd. And moreover, I think fundamentally wrong that maybe on the day-to-day, in fact, I woke up this morning at 3 a.m. because young Julian, who's 6 months old, was crying away and I had to go back and, you know, put the pacifier in his mouth about five times. That didn't make me happy. But at the end of the day, or the end of 16 years or 17 years, the amount of joy that he will bring to my life, the enriching sense and quality that he gives to my life as a whole, that's incalculable. And no government index will ever calculate that.
Darren, I wish you a fulfilling weekend. Let's not talk about happiness anymore.
I was happy to be here.
Thank you, Darren.
Not at all. Thanks a lot. It was fun.
Darren McMahon is the author of Happiness, A History. Now, what Senator Dorgan is contemplating, as we mentioned earlier, it's not new. Private groups in Canada are working on an index of well-being designed to measure, among other things, civic engagement and community vitality. And, for example, volunteer work would be factored as an asset. Overwork and stress would count as deficits.
Sounds like a good idea to me. And, you know, the government of Bhutan even has an index that's called Gross National Happiness.
Well, I don't know about the pros and cons, but I love the name. You're listening to Weekend America.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
Coming up, a governor on the hook, identity politics, and a poodle dyed pink. Good news, bad news, no news, next on Weekend America. You're with Weekend America from American Public Media. I'm Bill Radke with Desiree Cooper. What are you talking about this weekend? This past week has been exhaustingly eventful with resignations and assignations and accusations of racism and identity politics and some other intriguing things happened this week that you might not have heard about. All of those things now tumble into the basket we call good news, bad news, or no news. Discussing how the week's news felt to us is political consultant Tara Settmayer. Welcome, Tara.
Thank you.
New Yorker cartoon editor Bob Mankoff. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
And writer-comedian Dana Gould. Hey, Dana.
Hi.
This week, we all watched New York's governor resign after a prostitution bust. Did it seem like good news to you, bad news, or no news?
I thought it was great news because I really admire Spitzer, because when he said, you know, no person is above the law, and I thought he should have resigned, appointed himself special prosecutor, and put his own ass in jail.
That would have been a neat trick.
I think he's gotten his own ass in trouble a few times, too many, so I want to see that again.
If he was more willing to do things to himself, he wouldn't have needed the emperor's glove.
What kind of news was it, Tara?
Bad news for politics in general. I mean, once again, it takes away from any type of trust you have in the public, in public officials.
But I think that's good news, that what it teaches us is not to trust people. This is what reality is. Get used to it. Everybody thinks somehow it's going to change or people are going to change and be better. They're not. To me, you need actually that knowledge to move forward realistically.
Well, to that end, I think it's actually no news. I mean, this was such a predictable Greek tragedy. He should have been wearing a toga when he resigned. And I also think it would be bad news if the woman in question uses this to gain some sort of fame, because that would be...
What do you think the odds are on that?
100 to 101.
It's already happening.
It's already happening. She's a singer, and millions of people, including record... I've read about this in the Washington Post. Record executives are banging down or knocking on her door.
Interesting choice of words.
Thank you. Knocking on her door and listening to her her MySpace page with her R&B.
Right.
Well, it's bad news again, because I hope that this doesn't glamorize the sex trade industry.
Too late.
Well, you know, but the real victims here are, you know, his wife and his daughters. And I just don't understand, as a woman, what it is about the male libido that clouds their judgment to the point where they're willing to put everything on the line for... What a couple of seconds of pleasure. I just don't understand that, and I feel sorry for his wife and
kids. That's the horror for men, just a couple of seconds. That's why women are so unhappy with us.
That's why he has to pay $5,000 to get somebody to put up with that, I guess.
For a nanosecond of pleasure.
Dana, any final thoughts?
I'm shredding my checks to the Emperor's Club. I couldn't hear you.
Okay. So if you could turn the shredder off while we're doing a radio taping, that'd be great. Okay, our next topic. Former vice presidential candidate Geraldine Ferraro also resigned from Hillary Clinton's finance committee after she said Barack Obama, quote, would not be in this position if he were white or a woman of any color. Her comments, the reaction, her resignation, was it good news, bad news, or no news?
I would say the headline for this story should be dumb comment elicits predictable overreaction.
No news.
Yeah.
I think it's good news. It's good news because she's right, okay? And her comments were taken out of context as usual, and everyone just who's falling all over themselves to make sure they don't offend Barack Obama or insert race into this campaign. I mean, it's asinine. And I'm so sick and tired of the double standard. She wasn't insulting him by saying that he wasn't capable and he was only there because he was black. She was simply saying she wouldn't have been chosen to be vice presidential candidate either if she hadn't been a woman. It's a political reality.
He is where he is because he's black, because he's incredibly intelligent, because he's charismatic. All of those things are pluses. So, I mean, it's a reality. It's bizarre that I guess it's just because she was thought to somehow diminish him in some way, and it's sort of a political tit for tat.
Since she works for Clinton, a lot of people wondered what was her point except to cut him down.
That's absolutely true. But to that end, the Obama campaign could say that if Hillary Clinton wasn't married to Bill Clinton, she would have never been elected senator from New York.
I agree 100%.
But they're smart enough to not say it.
I think a nice point for Obama would be to choose Ferraro as a vice president.
Because there's nothing that racially calm white America loves more than a black guy with a white woman.
Our next topic. A Boulder, Colorado woman says she wanted to raise awareness of breast cancer, so she dyed her white poodle pink using beet juice and Kool-Aid. This violated a Boulder ordinance designed to stop people from dyeing rabbits and chicks for Easter. And so she faces a $1,000 fine. Is that good news, bad news, or no news?
But poodles are so humiliated anyway. Well, just by being poodles, aren't they? So being pink, it seems it's like small potatoes compared to the little fluffiness that goes on all around their hind end or whatever.
Bad news, then, that she's in trouble?
I think it's bad news. It's another example of the nanny state, for goodness sakes. I mean, where are they going to stop? Are they going to tell us now we can't water our plants with tap water because it's cruel and unusual punishment to the plants?
Are they going to tell us we can't put our children in washer dryers to watch them go around? I mean, where will it end?
Weekend America does not endorse the previous statement.
I have a cauldron here of boiling food coloring and a bucket of white rabbits and another one of life's simple pleasures spoiled by a meddling bureaucracy.
Well, listen, what are they going to come and arrest me because I dress my cat in Giants jerseys? His name is Tiki and he has his own Giants jersey.
Okay.
This is ridiculous.
Are they going to come and arrest me because I've shaved my dog and embedded him with nails?
Supporters of the ordinance, it passed because dying an animal is cruel and demeaning.
Can animals be demeaned?
Well, that's the question.
That's the question.
Can they?
When you see a bear on roller skates, it's like, the bear never has this expression like, oh, this is great.
Our last topic. The owner of a McDonald's franchise in an increasingly Asian L.A. suburb has remodeled it using feng shui. Owner Mark Brownstein says he wanted to boost sales, so he hired a feng shui master to design waterfalls and wooden ceilings and doors that, quote, confuse the evil spirits and keep the good spirits in. Does this strike you as good news, bad news, or no news?
It's amazing news to me that the evil spirits are that dumb. The door, that's it? They have to confer? They can't get in? Wow, they did the door thing again to us. We'll never
solve
that.
They're not crafty spirits. They're evil spirits.
Yeah, right.
Well, if they can feng shui it enough to keep the evil calories out of the food, then I think that that's great news.
Does anyone think it's bad news that a corporate entity, especially one selling slaughtered animals and heart disease, is co-opting a subtle and sophisticated art from a different culture?
A lot of those animals are not slaughtered. They just fell down.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
I think it's great that McDonald's, it would be great if McDonald's and Starbucks were allowed to design their places a little more unique. It would, you know, sort of work against the mallization of American cities.
The feng shui master's daughter says when you're in a soothing environment, you don't stuff your face. Good news.
It's called feng shui because when you're, most of the people that eat at McDonald's, that's the noise they make when they try to get up.
Feng shui.
Okay, that's the news this week. Panel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
A real pleasure.
Bye.
Writer Dana Gould's credits include The Simpsons. Tara Setmayer is communications director for Representative Dana Rohrabacher, a Republican from California. Bob Mankoff is the cartoon editor at The New Yorker magazine. What struck you as good news, bad news, or no news this week? Let us know when you come see us at weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This program is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, and KPCC Los Angeles.
If you were born before 1998, the musical Dark Ages. The birthday of the MP3 player coming up on Weekend America.
From American Public Media, thanks for sharing your weekend with us. I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. This week, we're launching a new series. It's called The Weekend Shift. Not everybody relaxes on the weekend. Plenty of us work, and we want to hear those stories. Some are working out of necessity, and for others, the demands of the work week just seem to bleed into the weekend. And for a few, it's a calling. Weekend America's Nate DeMayo caught up with a volunteer weekend fashion photographer whose photos might just save a life.
Katya Litsky knows how tough it is for models. Take Jane, for instance. Today, she's got to sit on a hot sidewalk across from a clattering, moaning dairy processing plant, wearing nothing but a Hawaiian leg. And it can be hard to sit sometimes.
Sit, sweetheart. Oh, that's a good one. Look at that face. You want to sit?
During the week, Litsky helps create websites for an online advertising agency. But every weekend lately, she's here.
Hey, Jane.
Taking quasi-glamour shots of shelter dogs.
You've got the magic touch with the pits.
She pulls little bandanas and pink boas out of a paper bag.
This hat, I try to keep it on the dudes. Who doesn't like a man in a top hat? And then I have a little medal here, a number one medal, the Labs. For some reason, I mean, I might be nuts, but...
Let's pause here. I know that some of you are thinking, you know what, lady? You might be nuts. You're one of those crazy dog people. She'd say no. The work she does is an idiosyncratic response to an insane situation. Last fall, she was surfing the internet at work, and she came across this disturbing video about conditions at a puppy mill. She became sort of obsessed, especially when she learned about LA's overwhelmed shelters. Last year, they took in 26,000 lost and abandoned dogs. And despite a huge and pretty successful effort to make the shelters kill-free, they had to euthanize more than 6,000 of them.
I felt like there had to be something I could do.
At first, she was overwhelmed, all passion and no purpose. She started going to animal shelters, like this one in South LA, like all the time. And she'd go into these kennels, where there are dozens and dozens of dogs, three and four to a cage. Puppies who'd been abandoned when their owners couldn't afford to keep them. Pit bulls and Rottweilers scarred from dog fighting. And she'd walk up and down the aisles of barking dogs. And she'd talk to them.
I literally was that girl, just like walking around, talking to dogs.
Back at work, she'd keep going to the shelter's website and looking at the pictures of the dogs she'd gotten to know. They looked shell-shocked or broken.
Because I work in interactive advertising, I looked at the website and saw that the dogs, some of them had really, really bad pictures. You couldn't see the dog, or it looked like they were being choked, even though they weren't.
And she knew that many of them would be killed if they weren't rescued. It was all a bit too much.
It was a feeling that, like, I can't stop talking about it. And I have honest people in my life who will say to me things like, I love you, but I don't want to talk about dogs right now because we're at dinner. Like, it's kind of a romantic evening, so can it with the Rotties.
And that honesty helped her steer clear of what she calls the chasm of craziness, that place where your passion and your righteous anger get the better of you. And she realized that she was in a good position to help. She knows what makes advertising work. Maybe she could give those shelter photos a makeover, something to make those sad, scared dogs more adoptable.
I felt like, well, people go to Gap and J.Crew. They go to their websites to see stuff, and then they go to the store and buy it. So maybe if there are good pictures.
Oh, my God, she's so pretty.
And so here she is, just about every weekend, trying to catch the dogs at their best.
Yeah.
And if a shelter dog in a costume seems a little silly, so be it.
What a good girl.
The plan seems to be working. The other day, a couple came in asking for a mutt named Duncan and adopted him. They thought he looked fabulous in a tiara.
That was basically like Cindy Crawford. That's what was going on there.
In Los Angeles, I'm Nate DeMayo for Weekend America.
I'm being petted.
Do you have a story about working on the weekend? Are you trying to make ends meet, trying to fill the time, trying to juggle the family, or just trying to make a big difference on your off hours? If so, let us hear your story. Contact us between shifts at our website, weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles. Desiree Cooper is in St. Paul. Des, we've talked about our weekend music on the show before. You work out to, was it Jay-Z on your iPod?
Yeah, his music really helps me keep pace while I'm working out, but I don't have an iPod. I have a Zune.
A Zune. Sorry about that. Well, there you go. You have a Zune. I have an iPod. Neither of us say I have a portable MP3 player.
Right.
Because that part is understood. But there was a time when portable MP3s were new, and that time is now 10 years ago. In 1998, the introduction of the MP Man meant no one has to jog carrying a hard drive, and so much more to the music world. Elliot Van Buskirk was part of a techie crew that got to test drive the MP Man when it came on the market. He has since made a career of writing about the digital music revolution for CNET and Wired. He says it all goes back to the MP Man.
The first time I saw the Iger Labs MP Man F20, I was just walking down one of CNET's cubicle farms. You know, this was a typical dot-com setup. And just by sheer chance, I see this guy pick up a little black box that's attached to his computer, disconnect it, plug in headphones, walk away, and blow my mind. First of all, it only fits 10 songs, so you don't really have to worry too much about navigation. But the navigation that was there was very much, you know, exactly what you'd have on a CD player. Fast forward, pause, rewind, and then there's a little display that only shows you the number of the track, so you don't actually see the name of the song that's playing. I think, you know, they were thinking, well, this is the first generation. Maybe this whole MP3 player thing isn't really going to take off. You know, maybe the next generation will start displaying song names. The MP Man that I have now sounds about as good as an iPod. It's kind of like one of those mosquitoes trapped in amber or something. Because I've lost the parallel port cable that you use to put songs onto the device. So I'm still stuck with those same five songs that I loaded on there originally. And the first song is one that I recorded myself called This Means Boire. And then the last two songs are by My Buddy Valentine. There's an instrumental called just Instrumental B. And then finally is Soon, which is probably their best-known track. And I'm actually happy to say I'm still into My Bloody Valentine, and I have tickets to see them in Glasgow, Scotland on July 3rd. In the early days, 10 years ago, I felt like I was one of the only people who knew about this stuff. And for about the first 2 years, I reviewed every single player. And of course, that's impossible now. There are thousands of different models. But for a while there, it was a very small party, and it felt like being part of an exclusive club, you know, just knowing that this was going to change the world and that nobody knew that yet. The MP Man, you know, with its pure dedication to audio, that's actually something that I still like in a device. I don't need to watch little videos everywhere I go. You know, there's been a lot of talk about the MP3 player disappearing and it's just going to melt into the cell phone. And to me, for the serious music fan, it's going to be really hard for a multifunctional device like a cell phone to really give you the experience that you need. You know, the best possible music experience is only going to come from a device that only does music.
Elliot Van Buskirk covers music for Wired, and you can hear his song, This Means Boire, at weekendamerica.org.
Yeah, with my Zune, I see music as a soundtrack to other activities, so I'm listening to things I wouldn't otherwise, like punk music, opera, Jay Unger's fiddle music.
Right. I love how it's transformed my shopping. I can be, if it's on my iPod's on shuffle, I can be quietly picking out organic greens and suddenly My Chemical Romance is screaming in my head, transforming my errands. This is Weekend America.
Every frigid winter morning, Steve Layton gets up and walks out on a frozen river in Bodingham, Maine. He prepares his 10 ice fishing shacks for another day of smelt fishing. People from all over New England come by, drop in a line, and try their luck. Producer Grant Fuller visited Layton's smelt camp, and he brings us this portrait.
My name is Steve Layton. I'm the owner of Layton Smelt Camps here on the Abbey-Cadasset River in Bodenham, Maine.
This is a New England phenomenon. It's just a way to pass the time.
I have 10 camps on the river. They're ice fishing camps. They're ice shacks or smelt camps or shanties, whatever you want to call them, I guess.
I like sitting in a shanty and just fishing away.
You come right up to the ice.
When you first arrive at my smelt camps and you've never been here before, people look out on the ice. They describe it as a little village because it looks like just little miniature houses sitting side by side all in a row.
Did you get him?
No.
Did he eat your bait?
The camps are 8 feet by 8 feet. They're about 6 feet tall. Inside, I have two race holes. The race holes are what the people fish for.
Ah, come on.
The regular ice fishing holes are 8 inches round. My holes are a foot wide and 8 feet long, and there's one on each side of the camps.
You dropped them at the hole.
I'll drop you in the hole in a minute.
I've been running the camps for about 40 years with my dad, the last 7 or 8 by myself. When he passed away in 99, he started the operation in 53. Each one of my camps have a wood stove inside of them to keep the people warm.
Someone sounds just like a jet plane taking off.
A lot of people say, geez, I want a job like that. All you got to do is set the camps out there on the ice and collect money. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. I mean, it's a 22-hour job around the clock, you know, and the people just, they don't see that. All they got to do is walk down and go into a nice warm camp. They don't think about how come that camp is already warm.
I heard you were here.
This guy, I've been fishing with him before.
Lousy. I haven't even had a bite, and I've been there for hours.
People will come and try to catch fish, even if you tell them they ain't biting, and maybe they'll get lucky that day and catch some. But if you tell them they're biting and they come down and they don't get any, they ain't going to come back that year.
I hate this. I don't mind not catching, but this is stupid.
I've learned over the years that if you tell the truth, they like it a lot more. I mean, if they ain't biting, they ain't biting.
Yeah,
see, this is just plain ridiculous.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
I'm going to have to do a little outsmarting of the fish. Somehow.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
The fish aren't biting. The people are drinking, usually.
This is what you do when you smelt fishing. Drink beer, freaking don't catch anything.
I don't care if people drink and have a good time, but I don't want them to come here just to drink. They have bars or what? I'll stay at home for that.
Now, I get any bites on that pole over there?
Yeah. I want them to come to try to catch fish.
There you go.
Oop. Say hello to my little friend.
The smelts that they catch run anywhere from about 4 inches long to 12 inches long. They're called rainbow smelts.
Hey, call the taxidermist. I want to have this one mounted.
They have a bright, shiny, silver, scaly finish to them, and the top part is a greenish blue.
Had some good catches over the years, yeah. 300 or 400 anyway sometimes, yeah.
160 of them, and the time before we got 150.
All smelt fishermen are liars except me and my son, and sometimes I ain't too sure about my son.
I've caught 5 gallon pailful. We did it a couple times.
The average person is happy with 25, 50 fish, you know. The 5 gallon pailfuls only look good to walk by and show you, right? I mean, what are you going to do with 400 fish?
Okay, so are you going to come give us a quick lesson?
I will see if I can get everybody in.
That's a good thing.
What you want to do right now is...
I love working with people that's really enthused about fishing, you know. I mean, I love to fish, but I almost have more enjoyment telling them how to be better smelt fishermen and help them catch the fish.
Nice. Another one? That's a good one.
Nice. Oh, good idea.
A lot of times you'd come up and it's so fast that you just flip it into the bucket, throwing the line back in.
Look at this.
We're reeling them in now.
This is quality fishing right here.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
We're cooking them up right here in the shack. That's part of the fun and excitement.
Cut their heads off, rip up the belly, and then fry them. Bones and all.
Roll them in flour, a little salt, pepper, put oil. It's like frying an egg, and it's over. Perfect.
You deep fry them like French fries.
And it's got a very delicate flavor. It's got not a lot to it.
Good, sweet fish.
I had people coming in at all hours of the night, leaving all hours of the morning and day. Sometimes I just don't know how I do it. I'll drop after the season.
Grant Fuller produced that piece, and it comes to us by way of the Salt Institute. There are some gorgeous photos of the river shacks and the folks who are fishing there. Check it out at weekendamerica.org.
This is a stormy weekend, especially in the South. Here's more on weather across the country with John Moe.
When it comes to festival planning, go with what you know. Ergo, Sistersville, West Virginia, hosting Sisters Fest, a celebration of sisterhood held under clouds on 48. If you don't have a sister, they have spare sisters available. Really. The event in Sistersville is expected to be better attended than similar events in the nearby towns of Second Cousinsburg and Great Uncleton. Cuba, Kansas is ready to rock. At the Cuba Rockathon, residents, do we call them Cubans, are logging 313 hours in their rocking chairs to raise money for building restoration. The Cuba Rockathon features afternoon clearing, 45 degrees, and misunderstanding the event, a confused Fidel Castro wearing a Led Zeppelin t-shirt. When your river turns green, you call it pollution, except in mid-March when you call it St. Patrick's Day. San Antonio, Texas celebrates the Irish holiday under sun and a bunny 87 degrees by dyeing the San Antonio River green and holding a parade. The river wasn't always green on St. Patrick's Day, but after years of the river being pinched by its friends, the city felt it had to take action. For information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
Are those Irish eyes smiling or crying as they lay Danny Boy to rest? Coming up on Weekend America.
Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Online at calvert.com.
From American Public Media, this is the show about the weekend. I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. And this weekend, people are already celebrating St. Patrick's Day, which is Monday. As we speak, A.J. O'Neill is starting a marathon of the Irish standard Danny Boy at his music cafe in Ferndale, Michigan. A.J. bought the cafe a few years ago, and it's noted for its open mic nights and A.J.'s specialty soups, including Irish stew. The Danny Boy Marathon will last through Monday when he hopes to break a world record. And one of the biggest challenges he's facing has been organizing this weekend's performers.
This weekend, we'll have two microphones set up. While one group or person is performing, the next group or person will be on standby so that as soon as the person that is on is finished, the next person's ready to go. And we'll do that over and over and over and over and over.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside.
We have rock bands, we have jazz, we have swing, we have marching bands, choruses. We have a whole family of 18, ranging in age from 4 months old up into her 80s, all with kazoos. We have a 14-piece madrigal group of women who are going to be performing it in their own way. God help us all. When my father died, looking back, I think he knew when he was going to die. He had been in and out of hospitals his entire adult life. The last night of his life, he went over to my mother's sister's house and helped them move a dishwasher. And that was one of the few nights that all four of my brothers and I were playing baseball together on the same team at Lazenby Field in Berkeley, Michigan, which was walking distance from the house where he lived. So he got to go see us all play baseball that night, and he was in his glory when his sons played sports. He loved it. My father was a good Catholic, an Irish Catholic upbringing. He went to church every Sunday, always observed the holidays and rituals. So when he died, naturally, it was at Our Lady of La Salette Church, the church where he called home. There was a full Irish funeral. In fact, there were so many people that the little city of Berkeley actually had police shut down the road for the funeral procession. As I was growing up, my father's favorite song, or one of them, was Danny Boy, and I would sing that song when I was practicing to learn it for a Danny Boy singing contest from a local radio station. I thought if anything my father would love, I would give him that song. And when they made arrangements, the church said they'd provide an organist for me, and if I could tell them what key or what notes to sing it in, they would be able to play along with me. And the organist said it'd be fine. He would wait till I started singing, and then he'd join in. And so the time came, and my father's coffin was to the right of me, and I was over by the choir, and the organist was sitting waiting to start playing, and I just started singing. Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the leaves are falling. It's you must go and I must bide. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. I will be there in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, I love you so. And the organist didn't play. And I thought, wow, what did I do wrong? And I looked out and people were sniffling and crying, and I had made it through without crying. I was surprised. And I asked the organist later, why didn't you join? What was it that I did? And he said, it was too beautiful. I couldn't interrupt it. My father would be proud.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling. From glen to glen and down the mountainside, the summer's gone.
If you go to our website, weekinamerica.org, you can have some fun with the song Danny Boy. You can hear it being performed by a jazz piano master, a diva of the highest order, and the Muppets. A.J. O'Neill hopes to hear 1,000 versions of Danny Boy over the next 50 hours.
This is in stark contrast to a bar owner in Manhattan who is banning that same song from his pub this St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, he says that it's not sung in Ireland anyway on St. Patrick's Day, and plus it was written by an Englishman who never even visited Ireland.
Oh, that's the lowest. Still, as we've just heard, there's no denying the song's meaning to so many people, especially this weekend. You're listening to Weekend America. And that's it for another hour of our program. It's produced with Ben Adair, Julia Barton, Jim Gates, Millie Jefferson, Chrissy Clark, Sam Keenan, E. Akobi, Michael Rayfield, Susie Lechtenberg, and Tim Bamba.
Also Rob Byers, Brendan Newnham, Phyllis Owens, Angela Kim, Shirley Shin, John Moe, Mark Sanchez, and Sandon Totten.
Galactic created our theme music. Our executive producer is Peter Clowney. Jim Russell created the show. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. This weekend, we say a fond goodbye to our technical director, Johnny Vince Evans. Our online editor, Neely Allel, is leaving too.
Because of Neely, WeekendAmerica.org is a Shangri-La of information where you can listen, watch video, interact with us and your fellow listeners, and download a free podcast each week. Thank you to Neely and to Johnny.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck to both of you and to everyone. Enjoy your weekend.
Weekend America is supported by the Fetzer Institute as part of its campaign for love and forgiveness, online at loveandforgive.org. And made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul. And made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by American Public Media.
On the next Weekend America, music is such an important part of the weekend. Some of our best memories are tied to a song.
To this day, when I hear the Youngbloods play Let's Get Together, I close my eyes and I'm back in 1970 on top of a Ferris wheel overlooking the grounds of 50,000 hippies.
Maybe best isn't exactly the right word. The Youngbloods, A Dream Girl, and 50,000 Hippies on the next Weekend America. Join us.